Have you ever had one of those moments where you think that the bad guys have won? You know, maybe you felt outnumbered or overwhelmed, disappointed. Well, maybe even more than disappointed. Do you know that feeling when you lose? I'm not really very competitive with sports, but I still know the feeling. You know, especially if your team is like, has made a great comeback, like you were a little bit behind and you get a couple good runs or something and you're starting to rally, and then all of a sudden there's just like a bad call or like a questionable play. Something just stops the momentum and then the other team comes back and you lose. You know how bad that feels? You know what I'm talking about, right? You have like that pit in your stomach and that knot in your throat and you either just want to cry or yell. That kind of anger, you know, it's that same feeling like when you know that you're right, but your boss or your teacher or your parent or your kids just won't believe you and they win, they won't listen. Well, that's the feeling that our story today is for. That's what it's about, and that's why the Gospel of Mark includes it. So far in Mark's gospel, we've had a quick rise to fame for Jesus in the region of Galilee. And the whole thing starts with the beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And we know that that good news meant political proclamations of news of victory. So we know we're hearing a story about who's going to win. So we start on a high note with the scene with John the Baptist with a huge following at the river, and he's pointing toward the one who will come and save them from this corrupt world. And all eyes shift to Jesus as he comes on the scene like a hero. And John baptizes him, and Jesus heals a man and becomes a celebrity overnight. He heals and shows people care and love, and everywhere he goes, people are amazed by him. Until he goes back to his hometown, Nazareth. And there, they're not so much amazed by his miracles as they are astounded that he's claiming to be the Son of God. And they say to him, wait a second, aren't you the son of Mary? Don't we have your brothers and sisters right here with us? Like, who do you think you are? And they reject him. So, you know, it's kind of like you're falling a bit behind on the game. You're like, what's going to happen next? And he's amazed at them, that they would reject him. And it's our first major setback. But then Jesus leaves there. He changes his strategy, gets a new play going. He gathers his disciples, and he gives them power. He shares with them and sends them out two by two. And they then have authority to cast out demons and to heal. And he tells them to rely on the hospitality of people, and that if they're rejected, they should just shake the dust off their feet and keep going. They're going to rally. They're going to do this as a team. And so if it were a movie, I think it would be one of those preparation montage scenes, you know what I'm saying, where the team is growing stronger and working together. You know, the ones where at the beginning, they're like, they'll like miss the pass and then fall on their face, but then it shows them doing it several times. And by the end, they're completing the pass perfectly and making the score, and everyone gives a high five, and then they're ready for the next big game. This is a major trope, so I know you know what I'm talking about. But one of my favorite ones is in the movie Dodgeball. You know, it's a Ben Stiller movie, and it has Vince Vaughn with a ragtag bunch of misfits from the gym who have to play, or they have to win dodgeball to save the gym. They have to win dodgeball, but they don't know how to play, so they have their whole preparation scene where Patches O'Houlihan is teaching them to dodge dodgeballs by dodging wrenches while they dance, and by the end, they can do it. They're all completing it. They're throwing well. They're catching it. But anyway, by the end of the scene, they're ready. They're coordinated. They're strong. But then right as that scene is ending, it takes a creepy turn. as you, the viewer, realize that the villains at Glopo Gym have been spying on them the whole time. You realize that the bad guys have been watching and seeing the preparation. Well, that's what's happening in Mark's gospel right here. We see the disciples find the courage to go out. We think they're going to overcome the rejection and win. And then the scene changes. And we, as the reader, learn that King Herod heard. King Herod has been hearing about this whole thing. And it's very intentional. The writer of the gospel means to draw our attention to this story. It's meant to be jarring in comparison to the encouraging preparation scene we were just experiencing. First of all, it's shocking news. John the Baptist is like the Obi-Wan of this story, right? He's not the main character, not the central hero, but he's the one who finds the hero, who tells him his calling, who brings him out. Like, you're not expecting him to die. And his death is not a small deal. And it's obviously happened a while ago in the chronology of the narrative. And Mark chooses this moment. He waits to tell us now that John is dead. Just when we've made this small victory over rejection, this is when Mark chooses to tell us. This is following actually a movie trope that we have now called the hope spot, where things have been rough and tense, but then there's a gleam of hope, and you think the good guys are going to wrap this thing up, and then there's a crushing setback. That's this moment, the hope spot. You have some hope, and then bam. We hear, not even directly, but as just as Herod's part of Herod's thought process, we hear that he thinks that Jesus is John raised from the dead. I think as readers, we're like flipping back. Like, did we miss something? Raised from the dead? Wait a second, John is dead? Have you ever had that feeling when you're reading a book and you have to go back and read several pages before because you just must have missed this huge, important piece of news? And this scene stands out in the way it's told, too. It's a complete change of scenery. The first change of scenery we've seen in the story so far. Everything else has happened among the crowds, in the streets, in the towns, in the region of Galilee, or on the Sea of Galilee, a really small area. And it's all happening among everyday people. And now, all of a sudden, we're in King Herod's banquet hall, in the courts of power. And also, this scene so far in Mark, it's the first one that hasn't been focused on Jesus. All of the rest of the action has been following Jesus from the beginning. But here it feels like Jesus is suddenly really far away. He's out of reach, unable to help. Whatever's happening in King Herod's banquet hall, Jesus isn't coming in the door. And Mark has another literary device here. It's a flashback, which feels so out of place, jarring almost, in this story we've had so far that's been really fast-paced and otherwise just keeps rolling along. And this scene stops us in our tracks and gives us a flashback of something that's already happened. It's a scene of Herod remembering back to this massive moral failure of his. He remembers how John spoke truth to power in a dangerous time, and so Herod himself arrested John and put him in prison. And Herod is weak and selfish and easily manipulated and lacking all courage. And Herod knows, it even tells us, Herod knows that John is innocent. But all it takes is a dare, basically, from a young girl. That's all it takes. We think things are going so well for the disciples. We think they're going to win. But it's like Mark is throwing every literary device he has at us to shock us and confuse us and throw us off our footing, to remind us that injustice is not going to be cured with all of these healings and exorcisms. He reminds us that there is a system of injustice. There is a machine hungry for power and self-preservation. There is a structure in place to make the rich richer and keep the oppressed down. Because we forget that sometimes. We forget and we think we're winning, but then we are reminded of just how big the problems are. We might think we did a great job serving a meal at the shelter, but then we remember how many thousands of people are stuck at our country's borders, pleading for refuge. We think we're going to win when we see the strides we've made for equality, or when we have a great worship service with the churches on the west side of Chicago. But then we are just hit with the realization that structural racism is alive and well. Maybe we have a great practice with our team and we think we're ready, we're gonna win the big game, but then we arrive and it's Globo Gym or whatever great team or opponent you're up against. And you get that pit in your stomach and that lump in your throat and the odds just, it seems like you're not gonna be able to defeat it. We think that Jesus and his disciples are going to heal every disease. That's the path we've been on. We're thinking they're going to win. But then we are reminded that in the systems of power, all it takes is a whim. And it all comes crashing down. It's like they've been working out. They've been studying. They've been trying hard. And then the other team comes in and just with their pinky finger, it can all come crashing down. The girl requests it, and Herod executes John. It's just like that. When we feel, if you have ever felt afraid or powerless, or angry, or out of hope, this story is for you. This story is for us. Mark puts it here on purpose. We're meant to feel that anger and pain and shock because we recognize that feeling in our world, in our lives. And we just want to slay all of the Herods in our lives. We are seeing red, and we cannot imagine a peaceful way out of this. But Jesus can. And the story does not end here. Jesus and his disciples, however much we might want them to, they are not going to storm Herod's palace. They are not going to defeat their enemies. They're going to feed people. That's what's going to happen next. They're going to share. They're going to share meals together, and Jesus will even share a meal, the one we'll remember at the table today, with his betrayer. They're going to love their enemies. Now that is a rare trope in our movies today. It hardly ever makes it into our movies. But may it make it into our real lives. May we turn our fear, our frustration, and our anger into love, however impossible that might seem, into love even for our enemies. In the name of God, the Creator, Christ, and Holy Spirit, amen.